Welcome to the High on Life podcast, where it's all about empowering you with the medicine and the mindset to healthfully lose weight and thrive beyond the scale. I'm your host, Dr. Sasha High. This podcast contains general educational information on weight loss and beyond. Remember that while I'm a doctor, I'm not your doctor. So be sure to seek medical support from a qualified health professional. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm super happy to be on with you today with Julie May. She is one of our registered dietitians, part of the High Metabolic Clinic. She also coaches in our Best Weight program, and she runs our binge eating disorder program. So she has training in CBTT for binge eating. She's really experienced in emotional eating. Okay, so Julie's awesome, has lots of experience. And we were having a conversation last week, and we wanted to talk about nutritional strategies to help patients who are on one of the GLP-1 medications specifically. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to talk about that. And I know that some of you listening are like, what is a GLP-1 medication? So I'm going to just start by introducing, giving you a little bit of background. What are we talking about here? And then I'm going to kind of hand it over to Julie, and she's going to talk about some of the ways that we can manage those side effects. Okay, awesome. So let's just start with kind of the basics with the, what is a GLP-1 medication? So I am an obesity physician, and we recognize that obesity is not a lifestyle choice. It is multifactorial in nature, and sometimes we need to treat disrupted physiology. And the GLP-1 medications are a class of medications that treat that disrupted physiology. So you would probably, you may be familiar with the name Ozempic. Ozempic is semaglutide, which is a GLP-1 medication. Other medications that fall into this class include Saxenda, which is liraglutide, a newer medication called Mounjaro, or Zepbound if you're in the United States, which is tirzepatide. It has a GLP-1 component. There are other diabetes medications like Trulicity, which fall in this category as well. So GLP-1 medications are used in the treatment of type 2 diabetes, as well as in the treatment of obesity. And we use it for patients who meet certain criteria. And currently that is still based on BMI. So a BMI greater than 30 is the official definition of obesity, or a BMI greater than 27 with an adiposity-related complication like fatty liver or PCOS or sleep apnea or high blood pressure, diabetes. Having said that, sometimes we find that there are patients who fall outside of these criteria, but they have adiposity leading to disease. They might have a BMI of 25, but the adiposity is causing health problems. And those types of people would also be, should also be considered for these medications. Now, the way that a GLP-1 medication works is that GLP-1, we can think of it as a hormone. It is a hormone that essentially acts on various parts of the body. And one of its functions is when we've had a meal, GLP-1 gets released by our small intestine and it goes to the pancreas and it signals the secretion of insulin so that insulin can lower our blood sugar levels. This is in everyone. This is normal human body functioning. We all have GLP-1 circulating after a meal, and this is what it does for us. This is why we can leverage that ability of GLP-1 to have insulin secretion and lowering of blood sugar for people with type 2 diabetes. That's where we get the glucose lowering benefits of this medication. But we also use it in obesity because there are GLP-1 receptors in the brain in an area of our hypothalamus that is responsible for our appetite and fullness signaling. And so by giving a boost of this GLP-1 medication, we can correct some of the physiology in the brain that may be where some people experience excess appetite or excess food thoughts. And that part of their brain that should be kind of shutting down appetite or stopping the thoughts about food and the desire for food and the wanting of food is just a little bit more active. It's a little bit more heightened in people with obesity. And so this medication can kind of dial that back. And when you're not thinking about food all the time and having all this food chatter and thinking about your next meal, it's a lot easier to not overeat, to eat less, And then that results in weight loss. GLP-1 is also part of kind of like insulin. It's part of that insulin signaling pathway. So it may improve insulin sensitivity and decrease insulin resistance, which is another kind of metabolic disruption that can lead to weight gain. So that's kind of how these medications work. Now, there are also GLP-1 receptors in the gut, and that's responsible for some of the side effects. And that's what we're going to really focus in on today. So when GLP-1 receptors in the gut are stimulated, what happens is there's a slowing down of everything in the gut. So there's delayed gastric emptying, which means that food is going to sit in your stomach for longer. It's going to take a longer time to pass through to your small bowel. And when food sits in your stomach longer, there's an increased risk of reflux. There's an increased risk of nausea or even vomiting. And sometimes people will say like they're vomiting up undigested food from like 9 hours ago or like yesterday. So that's delayed gastric emptying. This is a normal side effect that there will be some degree of delayed gastric emptying with these medications. This is also, really, really heightened in the media where there's been reports of like gastric paralysis, right? I'm not saying it's not possible, but it is one of the side effects that we are aware of that we watch out for. And that's why having a doctor kind of supervising and like you're checking in and making sure you're tolerating things and you understand how to do the dose titration, all of that is really important. So, one of the side effects that we're going to talk about how to kind of minimize is reflux from that delayed gastric emptying, or reflux can manifest as nausea. Oftentimes, the nausea is actually just because of some reflux happening. So that's number one. But there can also be either constipation or diarrhea because of the effects on the bowel lower down in our digestive tract. So those are the main kind of GI side effects that we see with these medications. And there are things that when you're working with a doctor, we will do in terms of adjusting your dose, doing an appropriate and very slow dose increase, which we call the titration phase, checking in with how you're feeling and not continuing to increase the dose if you're not feeling well, for example. That's what you'll get from working with a physician who kind of understands these medications. And there are also a lot of things that we can address with our lifestyle and our nutrition that can be contributing, either for better or for worse, with some of those side effects. So that's a bit of the background, just so that we're all on the same page in terms of what we're talking about. And now I just want to invite Julie, who's been very patient as I ramble on. Julie, maybe you can kind of talk a little bit more about these side effects and kind of how you have helped a lot. You've helped a lot of patients in terms of managing these side effects through nutrition.
Yes, first of all, thank you for the wonderful introduction in the very beginning. And thank you for a really great explanation on what these medications are, because I'm sure anyone listening to this podcast, you've definitely heard of Ozempic if you are anywhere near the media or on the internet right now. That's all everybody is talking about. But there is some more fear-mongering types of articles, I think, coming out too about the side effects. And so some people are worried about being on the medication, or the rest of this podcast is definitely for you if you are currently taking the medication and experiencing some of these side effects, not knowing what to do. So the common side effect that we're going to talk about is that delayed gastric emptying, the nausea, the reflux. From a medical standpoint, if someone, for example, is not getting that close supervision that Sasha's suggesting with the physician, maybe with the dietitian, the option that may be presented to you is to take some over-the-counter Tums, something to help with that reflux, or you may be prescribed something called a PPI, a medication to help with your reflux too. And those are important treatments, but we want to talk about some nutrition and lifestyle things you could also do that might help. So this podcast is for you if you are currently going through your GLP-1 dose titration and experiencing that nausea, feeling like food is not being digested. Even some of my clients are feeling stuck because they're waking up with so much nausea that they can't really eat throughout the day. But then towards the end of the day, they feel like those appetite suppressing effects are starting to wane a little bit, and they're getting into trouble there too. So I have categorized lots of tips. This is the time where if you're a note taker, please take some notes. I'm shooting out lots of different nutrition strategies for you. And I have categorized it in three types of modifications that you can do if you feel like you are in this position right now. I want to talk about how you can modify your macronutrient intake distribution to help with that delayed gastric emptying, and I'll explain what that actually means. I'll talk about how you can also modify the texture of your foods and some very practical tips that I've suggested to all of my patients. We work with patients on GLP-1s every single day. And the last modification is the volume modification. And so just things that you can tweak in your daily day of eating to help with that also. So I'm going to start with the macronutrient modifications. So I think it's helpful to talk about the why behind things, and that's why Sasha gave such a great explanation on the GLP-1s. From a dietitian and nutrition standpoint, what the nutrition is aiming to manage is the problem at hand, which is the delayed gastric emptying, and then all of the side effects coming out of that mechanism that's happening. So the nausea, the reflux. With nutrition management, our goal is to not make that gastric emptying even further delayed. And it's going to sound a little counterintuitive because I think when it comes to weight loss, you are constantly being told to increase your fiber intake. We're not getting enough fiber. And in weight loss science, things have been changing. It used to be fats were the enemy. Now it's feeling like sugar is more of the enemy, and fats are actually encouraged because fats keep you full. It's going to help with weight management because it controls your appetite. But I have counterintuitive advice for people in this situation experiencing the nausea. I actually suggest if you are currently going through your dose increase and maybe you did a big dose jump and you're starting to feel that nausea, temporarily reducing your fat and your fiber intake. So counterintuitive advice, but when you think about it, fat and fiber keep you full. That's what that's what dietitians advertise as being the great things about these nutrients. But in this case, we don't want to be kept more full because the GLP-1 is already keeping us very full. And if you are experiencing this nausea, ideally it will pass. And that's why it's important to work with the doctor as well to find the right dose for you. But in the meantime, while you're still experiencing that nausea, temporarily reducing your fat and your fiber. And some very practical tips to do that is looking at your protein. Protein in general is quite tough to digest. Think about your meats. They're chewy, they're more fatty. And some options that you could try temporarily is focusing more on eggs, fish, shellfish, tofu, some low-fat dairy. This is going to give you the protein that you need throughout the day so that you're not losing your muscle mass, which is really important during your weight loss journey. But it's also not as fatty and tough to digest as things like steak or ribs or fried foods that are going to stay in your stomach a lot longer and generate that reflux that we're trying to avoid.
Okay. So, okay, you just like gave so much information there. So I want to make sure everyone's on the same page. So let's just back up. So in terms of who we are really focusing this advice on, if someone is like not familiar and hasn't started their prescription yet, with the GLP-1 medications, you will be doing what's called the titration phase. And this is at the very beginning where you're starting at a low dose and then each week you might be slowly increasing it, or well, it's actually not each week. It's actually like on a monthly basis that you're going to be increasing it. And that is to allow your body the time to get used to the effect of the medication in order to minimize the side effects that we're talking about right now. And so, Julie, your advice with that temporary reduction in the fat content and the fiber is really what we're kind of mainly talking about when the side effects are most prominent, and that is during that initial titration phase. So I also want to just kind of add, just to like calm people's fears, because people might be like, I can't afford to be like nauseous for the rest of my life. The side effects that we're talking about really are mainly as your body's getting used to it. So we're talking about maybe 3 months ish. It's gonna be different for everyone, but in that range. And it's not every week of those 3 months. It might be every time you do a dose increase, so maybe like 1 or 2 weeks of each month during that initial titration phase. But really, to calm a lot of like fears around this, I never want my patients to vomit because I think vomiting is awful. I hate vomiting. And so when I'm working with someone, I'm giving them full permission to go even slower than the recommended titration to like minimize this. So what we're talking about is like all of the strategies to make that initial phase as tolerable as possible so that you feel good when you're starting these medications. Okay. So let's come back. So use the first recommendation is modifying the macronutrients and perhaps during that titration phase, reducing the things that are going to just sit in your stomach longer, which is fats and fiber.
You nailed it. And thank you for that clarification too. So this advice is mainly just for the people who are starting off and going through their dose titration. Anecdotally, I notice these side effects and this advice will only really need to come into play, I think, while you're just in that dose increase is what I notice. This is definitely not a long-term thing. And
Perfect. Yeah.
realistically, the suggestion of temporarily reducing your fat and fiber, I would suggest only doing it until you start feeling the side effects and the nausea improving, and then going back to having a balanced diet and not cutting out fiber forever, because we also need that to treat the side effect of constipation.
And just for general health, we need fiber. So we're just talking about, and this is where, okay, let me just put in a plug. This is where so many people should really be working with you or another dietitian, right? So we'll talk about how you can work with Julie and our dietitian team at the end of this podcast. It will be linked in the show notes that if you are in Ontario, the dietetic services are available across Ontario, also available to patients in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, but we'll link that at the end. Okay, back to you.
Amazing. So we just talked about how we can adjust our macronutrients. I want to go to the second kind of modification we can do. And this one is texture modification. It's something that I think we don't think about, but it would be very helpful in that whole process of delayed gastric emptying. So I have some very practical tips, but the very first one that I like to give is consider alternating the texture of your meals. So again, the reason we're doing this is that we don't want to further delay that digestion process so that you get increased reflux or nausea. We want to make the digestion a little bit easier on us. And we can do that by adjusting the texture of our foods. So that advice that I have of alternating your textures, I suggest maybe you start off in the morning. If you're someone who gets that GLP-1 nausea right in the morning, maybe you start your day with just a protein drink. I love Fairlife. They have a really great low sugar, high protein drink, or doing a smoothie at home, something liquid to start your day and not having to have no food at all. And then maybe that next meal that you're eating is a softer, solid texture meal. So maybe you have a slice of toast with some eggs, some protein, and then that meal afterwards is then another liquid meal. Maybe that one you do a yogurt. And then the next meal would be a solid. So alternating that texture may give your digestion a little bit of time, because we know the liquid meal is going to digest a little bit easier than the solid meal. So you're just giving your stomach a little bit more time to digest the food that you're eating. So I want to go into a few more specific recommendations. When it comes to beans, something that might be helpful is trying pureed form of beans. So doing hummus, or it's actually not too difficult to make refried beans at home too, if you're someone who loves Mexican cuisine, where there's refried beans. It will be easier to digest than chewing full, whole, skin-on beans. When it comes to nut butters, you try doing nut butters as opposed to eating whole nuts or trail mix. Smoother texture. Vegetables and fruits, pretty straightforward advice, but trying instead of doing raw vegetables, doing cooked veggies. If you're choosing raw foods, do ripe or skinless options, ones that don't have too many seeds. So berries, you know, berries have lots of seeds. That's going to affect your digestion. And then when it comes to grains, maybe doing an instant oatmeal or doing breads that have less seeds in them. Those are finer texture. It might help with digestion a little bit easier than whole grain or steel cut or barley. In the evening, if you are someone like me who gets sweet cravings, a little bit of guidance on that evening treat could be choosing something that is a softer pureed texture and that is lower fat, so that you're not waking up the next day with reflux, as opposed to maybe eating a snack that was higher in fats right in the evening before you go to bed. Some ideas could be a pudding, maybe do an applesauce. Some ideas. And as you are trying some of these pieces of advice, and hopefully your nausea is getting a bit better, we want to incorporate that fiber back in again. So to transition, maybe helpful trying soups and smoothies and ways to get blended fruits and veggies where you are getting the fiber, but it's in a smooth broken down texture for your digestion. I have just a couple more tips for the texture modification, and then we're going to go to the volume modification. The last one is thinking about something that we don't think about too, is our medications and our supplements. So if our digestion is slowed, doing a slow release medication, it's maybe going to take a few business days before that medication is finally kicking in. So n doesn't not a super important game changing change, but something to consider is if you're taking some supplements, is it possible for you to get a chewable form or a powder or a sublingual form where you're dissolving it under the tongue as opposed to swallowing the whole capsules and large supplements in the stomach? Because we know that's going to stay in the stomach a little bit longer when you're on a GLP-1.
That's such an interesting, like, I don't think I've ever, pardon me, I don't think I've even thought about that. But like, if we think about, a lot of people, if you're on a health kick, all of a sudden you're like, I need 10 different vitamins. Let me just like grab 10 pills and swallow these. And like it's actually producing quite a lot of volume in your stomach. So that's a great tip there.
Yes. So that brings us to the last one, our volume modification. So we know that because our digestion is a bit more slowed, having large volumes of food in one sitting is not going to feel very good because that's going to stay there. You're going to feel like you have a brick in your stomach, which is how some of my patients describe it. And because there's a larger volume in the stomach, that's what's going to cause the reflux and all of that discomfort. So if you are taking a GLP-1, or even if you just experience reflux in general, I'm sure you've heard of this one piece of advice before, which is trying to have smaller meals throughout the day. We've all heard it, but it is very helpful. If you are able to space out your meals, maybe make your larger meals two-parters instead, or having snacks in between. That's just going to give your stomach some time to be able to digest and work through your day of eating more comfortably.
Yeah.
Another tip.
Oh, I just wanted to add, like, I think this is particularly relevant for the evening meal because in North American culture, we tend to have our largest meal in the evening. A lot of people are like having that meal pretty late at night too. If you're like working all day and then you're getting home at 6 and then you're cooking, and then by the time you're eating, it's like 7:30 or 8, and then you're trying to get it to bed on time. And so you're having this really large meal, and that is commonly the patients who are coming in and being like, I am waking up at night, I'm so uncomfortable. Like you said, it feels like I've got a brick, I've got so much reflux, I'm burping, I've got like a sour taste in my mouth. Like those are kind of the very common symptoms that people will experience. And it really is, okay, how can we address that nighttime meal? Because it's too much food, right? Like, so the volume is too much. And it's actually a really good sign too. It's a little bit of like feedback that of reducing the volume of intake overall, but especially at that evening meal. So that's a great point.
Yes. If it were up to me, and if I had a public health suggestion to make, it would be lovely if breakfast or lunch could be our biggest meal and that dinner
Yeah.
be smallest. But in North America, we do it a little bit differently. So many other cultures eat in that way.
Yes. There's that saying, right? It's like breakfast. Eat breakfast like a king, lunch as a prince, and dinner as a
Yes.
pauper or something. I think I botched that one, but yeah, exactly. It would be nice if we did that.
Yes, it would be more friendly for our digestion. So on the topic of having large volumes in the stomach, another piece of advice that you may have heard if you're someone who experiences reflux is trying your best to drink your fluids between your meals and snacks rather than during that meal, because we don't want to further increase that volume in your stomach at one sitting to create more of that discomfort. And on top of that, I know carbonated drinks, bubblies, there's so many different options these days. But carbonated drinks is another thing to be mindful of because that carbonation is also increasing the volume in our stomach as well. So ideally trying to have the carbonated drinks between your meals as well, if not trying to reduce it during this time where you're experiencing nausea in the first place. The next piece of advice is along the same lines of what Sasha said in terms of the nighttime having a large meal, feeling reflux and discomfort in bed or the next day. That's a good clue. If you are waking up and feeling really bloated or feeling nauseous, then that is a sign that likely that last meal that you had the day before, that dinner may have been too large. And a piece of advice that you'll often hear from a dietitian is to try to front load your day of eating earlier in the day, so that you give yourself time to digest throughout the day.
And I think that I think people hear that, and I think that's hard to implement sometimes, especially if you're used to eating a large meal, and then you, as you said, that meal's sitting there and you're waking up and you're like, I'm not even hungry. Like, I don't even want to be eating right now, right? So that's where I think people need to just to kind of establish expectations that this may be a longer term transition, right? And that you may want to just like make some small adjustments. Like, I know a lot of the women that we work with in Best Weight, we're talking to them about even starting to have breakfast, right? Because a lot of them, you know, maybe they've heard about intermittent fasting, or they're just busy, or they just haven't prioritized, or they're full from the night before, and then they're overeating at nighttime. And it takes some time to transition that. So if you're hearing this and you're like, oh, I'm totally guilty of that. Like, I don't really eat in the morning. I'm kind of backloading all of my calorie intake. And I'm also struggling with like reflux, or like you're wanting to make that shift, just be prepared that it may be a slow adjustment, right? Like, maybe it's just bringing in a small protein snack first thing, like you were recommending, like a protein smoothie or a protein drink as your first meal of the day. That's easy to digest. You know, you don't have to have like this huge appetite for it, and then slowly making that change. So I just wanted to kind of like remind people that we don't have to overhaul everything in one day, and it does take some time to adjust things.
Yes, and I think that's an important thing to talk about because some people that I work with who aren't currently having breakfast will tell me that they don't feel hungry in the morning, they feel nauseous in the morning, and they don't want to. But I think it's weighing the pros and cons here because the cons of not having something in the morning is maybe you're overeating later in the day and backloading that hunger, which will interfere with your weight loss journey, or physically. This is what's causing the nausea and the bloating and keeping you in that catch 22 in the first place. So it's the cost and benefit analysis. So I am a proponent of breakfast, or at least
Yeah.
something within the first couple hours of waking.
Yeah. And I think it's like people don't feel hungry in the morning. It's common. Okay. So I'm not going to say everyone, but a lot of times what we see is that people don't feel hungry in the morning. They feel kind of nauseous. And so they present that as though that's the reason I shouldn't eat breakfast, because my body's telling me like I'm not hungry. And it's actually the result of the fact that you're backloading all of your intake and you're overeating at night. And so it's like, actually, that's a very good sign. It's not the evidence that you should continue doing that. It's the evidence that there's a problem. And like, maybe we need to shift some things, right?
Yes, that's a good point. And for anybody on the fence about whether to start implementing breakfast, I have worked with people where I have reversed their day of eating so that they are front loading their day and they're eating every few hours. And at first, they were exactly the people we're describing who say that they're not hungry at breakfast. But after starting to implement this way of eating, their body did tell them when they woke up that they are hungry. They're experiencing hunger for the first time in the morning. It's actually something that can develop.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think we kind of like in our culture, because intermittent fasting has been touted as like the weight loss strategy, or is like the best thing for all health conditions ever. And I'm not saying it can't work for some people, but it's like, let's just not generalize every recommendation here. We kind of tout it as like it's like a something to celebrate if you like don't eat in the morning, like you're winning some sort of prize. And yet like we disregard the fact that like it's completely sabotaging the rest of your day, right? And like you're wondering why you're struggling with nighttime snacking, or maybe even binging at night, or like you're calling it emotional eating at nighttime, when it's really like, actually, we just need to take a few steps back and like address what's happening during the daytime and fuel yourself better. And I also think like, and I zero evidence for this, but I think if when your metabolism's like working well and you've had a fasted period overnight and you wake up hungry, it's like, yeah, because your metabolism's like ready to go. Like, let's get some fuel in to fuel our day, right? So No studies to back that up right now, but only because I didn't look it up.
I have a similar theory because I have worked with people who historically have chronically decreased their caloric intake and told me that they never experience hunger, even though you would think someone eating so little calories, their body would feel hungry. But I have a theory that it's the metabolism that is just burnt out, that it's no longer developing hunger cues. And if you are experiencing hunger cues again, I think that's a good sign for the metabolism. That's my theory.
And I know you've like reverse dieted. Okay, we're totally going off track here, but you've reverse dieted some women who've come to us who've been like on super restrictive caloric intakes. I'm thinking of one in particular who's done so well with us and working with you, where she was eating like 600 to 800 calories for a long period of time, and then you reverse dieted her and then got things moving again. She's actually eating more than she was before, but she's actually been successful in losing weight. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So, to summarize the suggestions, I want to talk about just practical tips to do and avoid and have more of. In general, temporarily, we're trying to make it easier for our digestion and not make food sit longer in our stomach. So, temporarily trying to reduce the fats and the fiber, choosing choices that are easier to digest, choosing smoother textures, liquid foods, maybe trying alternate a liquid food with a soft meal in order to make that digestion easier in the short term. And then also being mindful of the volume of food and fluid sitting in the stomach to help with the digestion process, reduce reflux. A few just practical tips that I didn't include in the beginning as well is alcohol. Avoiding alcohol because alcohol does irritate the stomach. When it comes to caffeine, I know so commonly skipping breakfast also goes hand in hand with having coffee first thing in the morning. But again, caffeine also irritates the stomach. So if possible, having some water, eating something before you have your caffeine to make it a little bit easier for the stomach. And the classic advice on what foods to avoid when taking a GLP-1 is the deep fried foods. So pizza, fried chicken, Big Mac and fries, foods are really yummy. It's okay to incorporate them sometimes, but because those foods are just so heavy and high in fats, most of the time you will experience some side effects after having a meal like that. So maybe one, just being mindful that this likely will be the consequence. Or knowing this, maybe you can try to spread out that meal or have just a smaller amount of it to mitigate just the reflux that you know will come afterwards, on top of usually diarrhea, stomach aches. This is what people experience when they have those deep fried foods.
And you know what? If you test it out, you'll get feedback really quickly as well, right?
Yes.
So, okay. So I think that just like you summarize that so perfectly, just to remind everyone, we are talking about nutritional recommendations specifically during the titration phase of the GLP-1 medications in order to minimize side effects. So I don't want anyone walking away being like, I listened to a dietitian and a doctor and they said I should decrease fiber. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm like, no, that's not what we said. We are
Yes.
talking about side effect management, mainly to help with like the upper GI side effects, which is the reflux, the nausea, that I have a brick sitting in my stomach. Feeling. That's what's going to reduce that. Julie, do you have any suggestions for the constipation that can come up with these medications?
Yes, in the short term, if you're experiencing the nausea and you're getting the constipation and you're reducing your fiber, this may be the time to talk with your dietitian or the doctor about a magnesium supplement or some other possibilities to help manage that until you can increase your fiber again. I know some doctors will also suggest a Restorilax or having some warm water, looking at some of those interventions instead.
And I think like we overlook some of like the basic things that help constipation are movement and water intake. Like your gut will get moving when you get your body moving, and we have so much sedentariness in our society now. So like let's not forget those basics too, is like, can you get yourself going out for a walk more regularly to try to get things moving? Are you getting enough fluid intake in? Because all the fiber in the world is not going to get things moving if you're not drinking, right? It's just going to bulk up your stool, but it's not going to pass through. So water, movement in your day can really go a long way for helping with constipation. And then sometimes the add-ons that we'll look at is a magnesium supplement. Magnesium acts as an osmotic laxative. So it draws water into your colon to cause the bowel movement to be a little e bit easier. And then sometimes more of an over-the-counter laxative like Restorelax or Laxaday, as Julie mentioned. So it's sort of a stepwise approach there. I would say that when like most of our patients, and I'm not saying everyone, like there are certain people who truly do have to like stop these medications because the side effects are too severe. But I would say that for most of our patients, when they're working with a physician, they're working with you or one of our other dietitians, and they're well supervised, like we're able to make this not a terrible process. And when I have patients who come and they've tried one of these medications from maybe another doctor who isn't as familiar, and it was like you start and you do the titration exactly as it's recommended. You increase the dose every 4 weeks, and like they don't know that there's options beyond that. Those are the people who are like, I had a terrible experience. Like I was so sick, and I'm like, oh, like it really shouldn't be like that. So I kind of want to calm the nerves of anyone who's maybe considering that this is the direction you're going to be going, that you may be starting a GLP-1 medication, that when done appropriately with the guidance of a dietitian and a physician, I'm not saying you won't have side effects, but they should be manageable. You should be able to live your life. You shouldn't be having to take sick days from work or anything like that. Like you should be able to continue to function. And there's always like little adjustments that can happen to make it easier, to make the whole titration phase and experience of these medications a lot easier. And the reason is because these are medications that can be good tools to treat obesity as a disease, in addition to all of the great health behavioral stuff that's super, super important for all of us. Julie, if there's someone who wants to work with you or one of our other dietitians because they're hearing this and they're like, oh, like there's a lot, right? I think you provided so much really good concrete advice, but at the same time, it's hard to like pull it all together sometimes, right? It's like I've got all these pieces of information, but like, how do I put this together? And like, what do I eat today, right? So if they want to work with you, what does that look like? How do they find you and book an appointment?
Yes, for anybody taking a GLP-1, we highly recommend working with a doctor or and a dietitian to help make that process a little bit smoother for you. And so if you want to work with me, it's very simple. You can go to highmetabolicclinic.com, and on the header, there's an option called Dietitian Services. We have online booking. You can go right into my schedule, book an initial consult with me to see me as a dietitian, and this is for patients who are in Ontario, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick. We work with GLP-1s every day, so I'm more than happy to help you make that process just a little bit easier.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much, Julie. This was a really, really helpful podcast with very like concrete and tangible advice for so many people. So thank you. I appreciate you so much. And to all of our listeners, have a wonderful week and I'll talk to you again soon. Bye.
Thanks for joining me today. If you enjoyed listening to the High on Life podcast, please take a moment to subscribe, share, and review it on Apple Podcasts.